Father Hardin, a member of the Society of Jesus, is professor of systematic theology at the Bellarmine School of Theology, Loyola University, Chicago, Illinois. He is author of many books and articles published in the United States, Canada, and Europe. His latest book is Christianity in the 20th Century. Father Hardin is a lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises. He is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin.
Part 4 of the General Catechetical Directory is entitled Elements of Methodology. It is also the shortest single section of the six which constitute this fundamental document of directives on Catholic religious education. Although short in length, it is not slight in importance. Its opening sentence gives a clue to the comprehensive character of the subject which this section takes up and develops, not at length, but with considerable depth. Within our century, says the directory, catechists have thoroughly investigated questions raised by the psychological, educational, and pedagogical sciences. Under the rubric of methodology, therefore, the directory enters into the three sciences of psychology, education, and pedagogy, and shows how the legitimate insights of these disciplines can advance the effective teaching of religion. It is not my purpose to go into these sciences as such, nor to speak about their valid contribution to catechetics. Rather, in keeping with the tenor of these lectures, I wish to focus on one phase in Catholic education that has become the source of no little confusion, and I think of grave injury in some quarters, because otherwise valuable conclusions of the aforementioned sciences have either been misapplied or because mere theories and unproved deductions, especially from child psychology, have been indiscriminately used in the teaching of faith, morals, and worship to the young. In order to be as specific and hopefully as enlightening as possible, I wish to concentrate on the one area that has evoked the most controversy in recent years, the subject of First Confession. My intention is to do two things. First, briefly, to identify each of six principal objections to early confession, drawn mainly, though not exclusively, from the purported findings in the psycho-social educational sciences. Then respond, even as I identify these areas, respond to the objections, both from within the respective sciences and from the historic teaching of the Catholic Church relative to the sacraments. Following this sequence of identification and response, I shall close with an overall evaluation with some practical implications for parents, priests, and teachers. I wish to stress, however, that my reason for going through this lengthy analysis, the first of its kind in this series, is not only to point up the need for a balanced use of the secular sciences for improved religious pedagogy, but the grave consequences that follow if scientific findings are used unwisely or without awareness that what passes for science may actually be a fad, or worse, a travesty of scholarship. Moreover, the ramifications of what I am going to discuss go far beyond what may seem to be such a trivial thing, all this fuss and bother about the age at which a child is introduced to the sacrament of confession. What difference does it make anyhow? What makes the issue serious is not only the speculation of religious educators or of psychologists of child behavior. First in Europe and now in North America, some dioceses have begun to implement theories that demand careful reassessment. At stake is far more than a delay of a few years in receiving the sacrament of penance. I don't hesitate saying that every important facet of the Church's teaching in the moral order and the whole of Catholic sacramentology is involved. Also, unlike what I have been doing in previous lectures, this time I wish to consider my next two lectures. You see, I have not yet begun. The next two lectures as essentially one. But the two lectures are intended to form one organic whole. The comprehensive title of the composite lecture is First Confession, A Study in Modern Catechetical Theory. The immediate impression one gets from reading the mounting literature dealing with First Confession is surprise. Why the sudden worry about the age at which a child receives absolution? To answer the question, we should review all the main arguments proposed against the Church's long-standing practice. They touch every fundamental position of Catholic Christianity on human sinfulness and of Christ's promise of forgiveness and peace to his followers from the dawn of conscious volition. Some of the arguments overlap, and not all are proposed by any one writer, nor all in English. Though I must say that some diocesan commissions lump all the arguments together without discriminating their relative importance. It may help to synthesize the arguments in key terms, each referring to a more or less distinct argument. Undeveloped conscience in the pre-adolescent, the new morality, confession only for grave sins, guilt consciousness induced, the sacrament in danger of being taken as magic, and finally, neglect of human forgiveness. What I will do, as I have been doing, is to identify each objection as a heading and then go on to both present it and react to it. And as I go along, I will number each subtitle. First, undeveloped consciousness of pre-adolescence. Those who have written most extensively to debar children from sacramental absolution appeal without hesitation to what they call the latest findings in psychology. As they read these findings, children are incapable of any formal sin before the age of puberty, which may range from 11 to 14 or beyond. In view of the gravity of this claim, it seems best to quote at length from those who make it, and add only such comment as may be necessary to bring out the full import of their thought. Beginning with the adage that good psychology and good morality cannot be in conflict, they state, on the testimony of experimentation, that before adolescence, no child can adequately distinguish right from wrong. I will now quote. Children are incapable of interpreting or evaluating their actions in a morally culpable way. The attainment of certain crucial concepts and the exercise of autonomy of judgment do not occur until the onset of adolescence, that is, between 11 and 13 years of age in most children. Until that time, they can be guilty of only material, not formal wrong, unquote. These authors and their followers recognize that any kind of actual sin, even minimal, would be reason enough for permitting children to confess and be absolved. They are at great pains, consequently, to establish two facts. On psychological grounds, that formal sin is impossible before puberty, and on theological grounds, that the same age at which a person is capable of venial sin, he is also able to commit mortal sin. This psychology is substantially based on the experiments of the behaviorist Piaget, whose work spans more than 40 years and has resulted in over 25 books, mainly dealing with child psychology. Piaget concluded that formal operational thinking, which means the full and perfect use of reason, does not appear until about 11 or 12 years of age, and he adds, at the earliest. He defines formal thought by two criteria. First, the ability to carry out a mental experiment, that is, hypothetical reasoning from assumptions or definitions rather than from concrete reality. And the second criterion, an ordering and awareness of the thought operations, such as memorizing definitions. Other experimenters are quoted to support Piaget, namely that pre-adolescents are incapable of theoretical reasoning. If some children seem to act otherwise, researchers at no point consider abstract, conceptual, relational thinking possible in a consistent and sustained way before 11 to 13 years of age. I cannot emphasize how many millions of children in the Western world have been affected by the theories of this French behavioralist psychologist. But having said this, that no child can have conceptual thoughts before adolescence, it is still a giant step from admitting that children do not practice theoretical reasoning and are therefore unable to commit any sin. This step is never taken on psychological grounds. Immediately those who argue against children's confessions jump from psychology to theology and quote no less a personage than St. Thomas. They rest their case from a single quotation of Aquinas's Summa Theologica, where St. Thomas speculates, and I quote his speculative question, whether venial sin can be in anyone with original sin alone. Let me repeat. Whether venial sin can be in anyone with original sin alone. Aquinas answers, no. It is impossible, he says, for venial sin to be in anyone with original sin alone and without mortal sin. However, nothing in Thomas Aquinas gives warrant for the conclusion which the critics of First Confession have made in context, and I might add, in Latin. Thomas is speaking not about baptized persons, who are obviously the only ones to be considered for First Confession. On that score alone, the authority of Thomas here is irrelevant. But even if, contrary to facts, he were referring to baptized persons, he specifically opts for an earlier rather than a later date at which even a child is capable of mortal sin. I quote St. Thomas, "When a child begins to have the use of reason, he is not entirely excused from the guilt of venial or mortal sin." Still, however, speaking of a child who has not yet been baptized. But having bridged the gap between pre-adolescent reasonless thinking, and that's the argument, a child before adolescence cannot reason. Having bridged the gap between pre-adolescent reasonless thinking and inability to sin, on the one hand quoting a secularist psychologist, on the other hand misquoting St. Thomas, these authors draw some startling conclusions. I quote, "Lacking the ability to make truly moral judgments, pre-adolescent children are incapable of committing either mortal or venial sin. Hence, there is no matter, no content for the valid administration of the sacrament of penance. Those aspects of religious and moral training which include such concepts as sin, punishment, and hell are psychologically harmful and are theologically indefensible before 12 or 13 years of age." Not long after this judgment was made, radical changes were introduced in more than one diocese, including one diocese that I know well, where the foregoing authors were the mainstay of an episcopal mandate forbidding early confession for the children in his diocese. Those who accept these premises also accept their conclusions, and not only to defer sacramental absolution, since children are presumed not to sin before puberty, their parents and guides are warned against repressing such natural instincts as the sex drive by an appeal to sin or God's justice. as the proponents of this new ethic see it, and I should add, they are all nominally Catholic. The whole gamut of Catholic religious education should be revamped. I quote, "There must be a fundamental reorganization of curricula and a rewriting of the whole present religion units and CCD texts. The current curriculum in schools, as well as the textbooks now used, is oriented towards premature confession, consciousness of sin, distinction between types of sin, and the consequences of sin. Forsaking hell, sin, and punishment, the appeal should be made to the Golden Rule as a basic principle. Building upon this, one can add humanitarian values of concern for the health, welfare, integrity, and dignity of others." Unquote. It is not clear at what age a person can be safely exposed to being told about sin or taught the attributes of an all-just and knowing God. No provision is made for such exposure after years of studied silence on the subject. In fact, the very trauma which these new catechists fear to inflict on children is sure to affect them as adolescents. To be told suddenly that actions like masturbation or fornication, approved by the authors up to adulthood, are supposedly sinful only after one becomes habituated to the practice, is, in my judgment, pedagogically unsound and maybe psychologically disastrous. So much for our first area of reflection. The second rubric, under which objections are raised against the confession of children, is the so-called new morality.
This conference is continued on Side B.